Hello, hello, you guys. Welcome back to Tell Me Why You're Special. This is not the place for polished bios and fake confidence. This is the arena, okay? This is where we talk about God-given potential and what it actually costs to build it, because nobody becomes who they've called to be without getting knocked around a little, okay? In this room, we do not worship comfort, we respect courage. And today's guest didn't just chase fitness, he chased mastery from athlete to trainer to building teams, studios, online businesses, and asking the deeper questions. Are we actually helping people become strong or just dependent? And that's what gets me. I'm excited to introduce you guys to Michael Kurkowski. Thank you so much for sitting in the hot seat today.
I appreciate it, Brett. That is my favorite introduction I've ever had coming on a
Yes.
podcast. So we are off to a great start. I'm pumped to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
I'm happy at least I have one win to walk away from
There
today.
you go. That's
So
it.
this is the first question that kind of everybody in the hot seat gets. Okay, it's going to be your elevator pitch. In 60 seconds, you run into someone. Who do you help? What do you solve? And what makes your approach different from the average fitness coach?
Good question. Best way I can describe it is I help people who are past the beginner stage of their personal growth integrate their physical and mental strength into all areas of their lives to build autonomy. And the reason I say that is because you mentioned it a little bit in the intro. I think a lot of what I've seen from coaching, specifically in the early stages, is focused so much on the client being enabled by the coach of saying, "Tell me what to do." And I think we all want that in some ways when we're trying to solve a problem. And I think that so often that turns into a relationship of dependency where my focus is on helping clients create a system of success. So not only do they get the goal that they first talked about when we connected, but they know how to repeat that success to the next goal that they have afterwards and afterwards.
It's the framework. And we all need a little bit of that framework. Otherwise, I mean, you know, how many people are saving their fitness coach from Instagram? They've got seven videos from seven trainers, and it's crazy out there.
Well, it is. And I think, like anything, at the beginning stages of anything that you're doing, whether it's fitness, whether it's mindset, whether it's business, whether it's family, like you're looking for some sort of roadmap. Like you need to understand like what lanes do I need to begin and take. But what I found so much, Brennan, is like once most people struggle and they fall back into old identities or old patterns, not at the beginning, but more somewhere in the middle where they've found some success. But what you do in the seeking phase when you're first trying to learn what you need to do is much different in the becoming phase, which is that next step, which is who do I need to become to keep this journey going?
Yeah. And I love that that's the work you do, because I know I was stuck there for a very long time until I found ways to make my brain work for me, right? My brain didn't fit everybody else's program, and I'm like, I'm broken. Something's wrong with me, and it's my brain is just different than other people's. When your trainer asks you if you'd ever pursue fitness as a career, what did that feel like internally? Was it obvious, or was there hesitation? Were you like, oh?
No, like at that time, I mean, this is about 17 years ago when I first got into coaching. And at that point, being, a young 20-something year old with really no idea of what I wanted to do with life, I thought like you're supposed to have everything figured out early on. I was just kind of living, just like working. I knew I liked to work hard. I knew I wanted to help people. And it was just an opportunity that my coach at the time at this small local club asked me, he's like, "Hey, do you ever think about getting into coaching or like personal training?" And I was like, "How does it work? Like, what do you do? Like, do you go to school for it? Like, what?" And he's like, "Well, yeah, there's some certification programs in there." And so I was like, "Well, I might as well, go after it." So I just, on my own, I just went out, just studied and figured it out. I got a job at that place working the front desk. Like, the one thing I always, I guess, had was the gift of gab. Like my mom is fantastic with it. She ran a business for my dad, growing up, and always knew how to just do the small talk and the chit chat. So I just was just around like a positive environment, coming from more of like the restaurant business, what can be a little bit toxic, a little bit kind of negative. The gym environment was one of the first areas that I just saw people who were like striving for something. And I just liked being around it. So kind of just out of sheer naive and just energy at that time, I was like, let me switch environments, and turned out to be a really good idea.
That's so funny because the restaurant environment is my origin story.
Yeah.
Like, I grew up serving, bartending. Like, that's been
Yep.
my play. I tell everybody, you want to learn anything about life, you go work in a restaurant from the back up, like, wash the dishes, see what it's
100.
like to cook, get out in front and work with people. That was like that. That's how I learned to be who I was. I think it's so fabulous. So,
Oh, it's the yin and yang energy, I think.
for
Like
sure.
if you work the back of the house, like that is the very yang dominant energy of like you need to get your tasks on, you need to get your shit
Right.
together, like know how to be on point. Then you go to the front of house, which is more of like speaking to people, like knowing how to manage like different energies and connections. And I always enjoyed it, but I also you come to a realization at the restaurant, either this is going to be like a path that you want to go into. I remember I was offered a management job at a restaurant I was working at, and it was the first thing I was like, I do not want to do this. Like, this is not where I want to go. And not long after that, I was kind of just my own self-discovery and searching. I was like, all right, I want to go into something different. And then this opportunity kind of landed in my lap, and then I managed that business for 10 years, then left there, opened up another business with a friend, a bunch of different changes over the last 4 or 5 years into what I do now, which is, my own online coaching business as well as running my podcast.
I love that. How did being an athlete shape the way you coach today? And are there places where it's kind of limited you because you've been an athlete for a very long time? So, is there a limit when it comes to, was there a limit? I'm sure you overcame it, but like, I'm not an athlete and you start coaching me, like, how do we relate on that level of like, you are an athlete, it's your identity now.
Yeah. I think what a lot of coaches I found who really make careers out of being coaches and keep excelling up were often like the mediocre athletes. I don't think like a lot of them were like so talented and like went super beyond. And usually when you're like kind of somewhere in the middle, maybe above average, which is where I categorize my athletic prowess. I played baseball and basketball mostly growing up, and I was never the most gifted athlete. Like, I had good skills, but I had to really work and practice and really study the game more if I wanted to get some playing time and, stay on the field.
Oh, it didn't
So,
just come easy to you?
yeah, of course. It was just, yeah, I was Caleb Williams
There
out there.
was no
No.
magic wand. I mean, it took practice. That's amazing. And I hope you guys are listening to that.
Yeah. And I've said this before, like I found a kind of a reverence and enjoyment of training and practice early on. Like I always knew, like for some kind of reason, like this was where you go to get better. Like the games are fun, like they're always fun to play, but like I knew like practice was always something that where you could really dial, like you can dial in technique. Like I said when I was like 13, 14, like I wanted to be like a college basketball coach. I was in love with like Duke basketball and like that era, and I was like always like I wanted to kind of get into some sort of coaching because I knew like the details of like getting a little bit better. Like that was always exciting to me. Sure, like scoring points and hitting home runs, that was exciting too, but like going in and practicing something and then applying it in a game and seeing the fruits of your labor, like that was like the goosebumps feeling to me. So, and I've heard that from a lot of other coaches, kind of the same thing. Like eventually you get to, a point where, I stunted at 5'11", so I wasn't playing basketball at any higher level, unless I was lightning fast. And yeah, so I think that was, I guess if I can bring it back to anything, just, understanding where training was really where you go and practice is where you really go to get better. I always loved stepping into that arena.
I love that. So earlier you said something about how you start, and in that process, the way you start can't be the same way that you become. So there's something that has to happen there. So going from personal trainer to managing coaches, what had to break or die in you, and what grew in you to be able to make that transformation?
It's a great question. Nobody's ever asked me that before. I think a lot of people in any business, they get promoted to manager. Or like they just go up the ladder because they were really good at doing the job that now they are overseeing. And so like the detail, it's kind of like being like a really great athlete, a really great player, right? Oftentimes that doesn't mean you're going to make a good coach because what you can do on the field and in your position might not be what the next person that you need to coach can do. And if you think like, oh, well, everybody just needs to do it like me, then Oftentimes, like, you don't know how to like relate to different personalities, and that's what that was one of the big changes that I had to recognize, where going from like my job was my clients, my personal training clients, into now managing a group of 12 people that I had to make them successful, not make myself successful, but really make them successful and like help them in their coaching and in their training. That was a different transition because, I could write a program, I can get anybody strong, but getting somebody really successful and not just like at the beginning phases of like teaching them how to program or teaching them how to go through a training session, but how to manage, help and help with people's lives. I mean, I think that's really the most interesting thing in the fitness world. Like a fitness coach might see somebody 2 or 3 times a week. That's up to like 100 to 150 times a year. That's way more than anybody else that's working on their health or their personal growth is seeing them throughout the year. So being able to not just train a person as a body, but train a person as a person, an individual who has a job, who has emotions, who has down days, who's not going to really want to do this in many ways, and not just put them through the motions, but actually teach them how to like create some autonomy in their people so they really feel good. That was a challenging thing to do because it's a different timeline, it's a different approach. But the biggest thing that probably changed for me with that, Brandon, is I was in charge at that point of managing of any new person that was coming into the business. They sat down with me. I was the sales manager. I was figuring out, is a membership good for them? Do we need to get them into a training program? Are we kind of working on that? And I just learned about every individual that was coming in from all different backgrounds and all different stories. And I just became fascinated with recognizing that everybody has a crazy life that they're living, like from super successful people who are, making millions of dollars to other people who have like 10 or 12 kids that they're managing, of other people who are athletes who are trying to get to the next level, to other people who have just gone through a crazy injury that has completely changed how they move and also their identity. Like you get to learn about every different person. And then all of a sudden, it's kind of this puzzle piece of like, what does success mean to them? That was one of the biggest really transitions that I found.
I love that. And I think that's the moment that I can see that is something that definitely makes you special is recognizing that everybody's in the arena. And I think so many people take that for granted. Like we don't acknowledge because we are so absorbed in ourselves and what's happening to me or, what's going on. And it really, nobody's any different or any better. It's either, you take this gift and you practice and you exceed and you keep getting up, you're going to get knocked down, you keep getting up, and then recognizing that everyone's the same and how can we help them get up a little faster next time. And I think you've done that, by being relatable and being able to see people for who they are, and I think that's amazing. What did because personal training is a lot different than opening a studio. So what was the lesson in that?
From opening a studio?
Yeah, like that's a huge shift. Did it teach you anything that personal training never could?
Yeah, well, I was a bit fortunate because I jumped into a studio that my former business partner kind of built a few months before. So he was at the very grassroots stages of it. So I came in and we kind of partnered up and then it started to really build and grow from there. It was very, it'd be an interesting story to say, like, it was this crazy challenge and like different things, but really, like, we were so in love with just the modality and building a community at that time. And what we really tried to do at the brick and mortar studio, because I was coming from the gym that I managed was a 15,000 square foot multi, layered spot. We had 12, 15 trainers that were going in. We had group classes. It was very much like a commercial type spot. To now we were in a 1,000 square foot space working with one specific tool. We were doing hard style kettlebell training. So the modality and like the way that we were training was very niche, very different than what you would see in a lot of other areas. But fortunately, me and Chris, when we started, and then Lindsay came on, we had a team where we just absolutely loved what we were doing and really building like a community. And there was a line that I learned at this time that it stuck with me. And this was like a sales-based line, but I think it applies to anything in speaking or connecting with people is I heard this line saying, nobody needs to believe in what you're saying. They need to believe that you believe in what you're saying.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Yeah. And I love that so much because I was like, if we are authentically telling people, like, this is why we built this up, this is why we created this system, we believe in this, we practice this, we approach it this way. And then it just leave it up to the rest of the people. Like, if you align with that, if you fuck with that or not, like, then that's great. Like, but what we did is then we really got the right people in that space. And not just people that believed in the program that we were doing, but just good people. Like, one of my favorite things that I saw, Brenda, was afterwards was we would, like, I would go, there was a little cafe around the corner from our spot, and I would, like, finish up a couple classes. I would go get a cup of coffee, and I would often see members of our studio there together, like grabbing breakfast or grabbing some coffee and just chit-chatting. So it went beyond just the sets and reps of work that we were doing in the gym and really built that connection outside of it. That's what I thought made it so strong.
Yeah, they were there talking shit about how brutal you were. They were like,
Yeah, no
"Oh,
doubt.
he made us do that today, and we didn't die."
Oh yeah, no doubt. Absolutely. And I would
That's
just
fabulous.
smile and just laugh. It was always a fun part of
Yeah,
it.
but I think that's an important lesson. I want to hit home on that, Michael, for the listeners, because you said that it's not about them believing what we say; it's that they believe we believe it. And so much of what we do and how we hold ourselves represents everything. And
Yeah.
I realized that, like, just on my own personal journey, how much everything matters. Like, physically, am I fit? Am I healthy? Am I making the right choices? Mentally, emotionally, spirit, everything matters when it comes to being in our space. So I love that, because nobody's going to take serious a trainer who is 300 pounds and eating a bag of donuts. Like, no one's going to believe that they believe in fitness. So
Yeah.
I think it's important that whatever you choose in life, that you're representing it well. You
Yeah.
know, that people can see that you believe that because you've put it in action.
Yeah. I think it's, and that applies just across the board with just
All over.
life. I think, we use words like authenticity and self-awareness as like these kind of tropes of just, you say that and you'd be like, oh yeah, we know what that means. But really, what does it mean? And I love breaking down words and like defining them and describing them. And I think when you talk about something that's authentic or self-awareness, really actually diving into what you value, like what you believe. Like, so my training background, like the physical training that I did, I learned from people like Pavel Tatsulin and Brett Jones, who created the RKC and Strong First system, which was really around like the kettlebell. Like, it was this hard style system of strength around like a specific tool. I saw something in it in 2009, 2010, and like really fell in love with this modality and like the way that these instructors were teaching us, got certified, and I just loved it. But I didn't go into that brick and mortar space with my former partner and really focus on this program until 2017, 18. So it was 7, 8 years that I remember the person that I was working for kept saying, like, this is a fad, like, this is not where we're gonna go with this. And I kind of kept this skill set in my back pocket for the sake that I really just didn't have the avenue and the open space to really open it up and really explore with it. So at that point, I remember hearing that. It'd be like, well, do I believe that? Well, I've seen it, these things work in another way. I'm like, no, this is what I really believe. This is what I love. This is really a passion of mine that I want to share with other people. And once I really bought into that and wasn't trying to sell people on it, I was just like, this is what I believe. This is what I found from this. Nobody can really debate that because it's my own personal, idea. Whether you mess with it or not, great. But like, I think it's worked really well for me. I think it could work for you too. That just completely just changed how I approach connecting with people and working with people. And I think if that's something that everybody can go into, whether you're in coaching, whether you're in, business with, whether you're in raising a family, there's different ways to raise, families. If this is what you really believe, own it, like hold up to it. Not everybody's gonna love it. Not some people are gonna like not, mess with you on that. But if you try and be somebody everybody likes, you're gonna be somebody that nobody loves.
Yeah. And that's a fact. And I just want to say it's so exhausting to be anybody but yourself. Like, there
Yeah.
is no, it takes so much energy and if you guys really just want to take a deep breath and you hone in on your core ethics, your values, on the things that you do believe in, because then everything is natural. It doesn't matter who says anything. Doesn't matter. And, you know, my audience knows I'm in the arena of I get a lot of hate and I'm here for it. I'm like, it's fine. It's fine because I'm happy. I love what I'm doing. But like, you're creating self-sufficient people. And to me, that's a huge statement because I think there is such a disconnect there when it comes, you know, everybody can be taught the right things, right? But creating self-sufficient people, what is your, do you have like this really great testimony of someone that you worked with them, you saw that shift where they just were like, they get it. A memorable connect, I guess.
I mean, the one that comes to mind, I have a client, her name's Judy. She's been training with me for 15 years. And she is now at the seasoned age of almost 83 years old. And
I
this is a
love her. She's
this
badass already.
yeah. And this is a woman who, well into her late 70s, was deadlifting 200 plus pounds, was snatching kettlebells overhead, going into tactical strength challenges and working. And, you know, I use this example. I mean, it's an easy example to talk about of like she's an older lady who's like, you know, crushing into her strength and stuff like that. She owns her own home. She still does her own shoveling here in upstate New York, and we get a lot of it. She plays pickleball. She does her, you know, kettlebell training, you know, 3, 4 times a week. So I mean, she does everything. She is badass,
I
as
want
you
her on
said
my
right there.
show. I
Yeah, she is the absolute
haven't
best.
seen
Yeah,
ever.
but the reason I bring her up as an example, not just because she's probably my longest 10-year client and, you know, she's, you know, stayed with me for so long, but we've gone through many transitions of working together. Like I've seen her train after her husband suddenly passed. She went from, you know, working out in a commercial gym, going to classes. Then I said, "Hey, I have this crazy idea of training with kettlebells. Do you want to jump into it?" She's like, "Yeah, sure." She came to a studio. She did the brick and mortar. Then when that studio closed, and now in my business, which is more online-based work that I do, she said, "All right, I'll try that too." So she was an example of somebody that not everything that you did before, even if it was successful, is going to stick around. You have to evolve and you have to shift. And what she did, and what's the greatest example that I've seen, is that the principles are set in stone. If you know those are the ones that don't change. The methods of how you approach it, those are things that are written in the dirt. Those are going to change and evolve, right? So kind of going back to self-awareness, what you value, those are the principles of how you live. Like, what are the things that you really stand for? If you focus on those, then how you get there, or what modality it is. Maybe you're in a gym, maybe you're in a small studio, maybe you're going outside, maybe you're in your own home, whatever it is, like the environment doesn't, you know, stay stagnant. That will shift as long as you know your principles. And that's what I saw with her. And I've seen her continuously succeed through all the craziness of COVID, when we had to shut down and then everybody was at home, where so many people I knew were like, "Well, I can't do it if we're not in the studio," and like, you know, all these different things of like, "I don't have the perfect environment set up." She was like, "All right, we'll pivot. We'll make a shift." And that's just absolutely glorious to, you know, to see.
What a gift that you still get to work with her. So I love that you have that and that you guys have each other really, because I'm sure you've gotten a lot from each other. So you talk about biofeedback and intuitive training. So can you break that down for us, just like for someone that's never heard of it? And ideally, how does that change results for long term?
So I look at the biofeedback work in two different ways, right? There's the physical side of like intuitive training, and then I think there's the psychological side of it. So starting with the physical, which is pretty brief, right? Our body, I heard this from a guy named Frankie Ferez, who created a book with Adam Glass called The Biofeedback Solution, which was essentially going to your training each day with a question rather than an answer. And what that means is that the body is very smart. The body knows what it needs. And so there's specific actually testing of range of motion and different like assessment work that you can do with the body to actually go to your body saying, what do I need to do today? Do I need to do more like squat work or do I need to do overhead work and stuff? So the physical way of approaching training on an intuitive basis, there's actually specific models that we work with there. I leave it usually at that because I am not the expert on that. Like, I know it from a student-based standpoint. There's some great resources that I've put out to people before that you can go on my website and check it out, that you can see those things in there. But on the psychological side, what I see with intuition is like once you get past the point where if you've been working on a health journey or a fitness journey, right? You've built the discipline, you've built the consistency up. This is now a part of your life, regardless of what happens throughout your week, throughout the time. Like you maybe have like a week off or so, but you are getting back to it. Like this is now a part of your life. That gets to a point where I call it the third stage, which is creation, where you need to now figure out what is the best way for you to train. So maybe not just following such a strict and rigid structure of a 6-week plan or an 8-week plan, like actually go into like your training of playing around with different ideas. Maybe it's different work with strength, maybe it's different work with mobility, maybe it's going into more something like a barbell program or a yoga program. And the reason I say that is like everybody thinks that they have the best solution, right? I think kettlebells are a great modality. I don't use kettlebells for every one of my clients because some of them, it doesn't align with what works really well for them. But they built consistency up, they built practice, they followed a structural-based program for a while. Now they're at that point where, all right, now we need to figure out how does a program fit into your life rather than make your life fit into a program.
I love that.
Yeah. And what I mean by that is if you see so much of the fitness world is all 30-day challenges, 6-week challenges, like you need to do all this type of work. And most people who are just so desperate to make any type of change or transformation, they will fit their life around that program at the moment. But what happens after 6 weeks? There's a lot more time. The sun's going to rise the next day. Do you just jump to the next program? Jump to the next program, which is what most people do. And then they're always searching for the next savior, the next program.
I did
And
that and it ended up putting me in a freeze state, where I was like, I'm not even gonna do anything. It's too hard to find something else. And so, yeah, that it's toxic. It can be toxic.
And I think this is where a lot of zealots come out and a lot of people where it's like if anything works for you in a short period of time, I went vegan, so now everybody needs to be vegan, or I went carnivore and now everybody needs to go this way. Oh, I use kettlebells. Now kettlebells is the best way to go. I'm at the point now in 17 years when I'm like, it all
It all
works.
works.
You just have to find the principles and what works best for you. So that's like, but that's usually like about the third phase that I work with people on. Like usually if I work with somebody about a year, we are focusing the first 6 months on that recovery and discovery phase. Recovery is eliminating the shit that doesn't serve you anymore. And then discovery is what are the things we need to add into your life? Most times we do that in reverse. What do I need to add into my life to make me whole? Which is more the best thing that we can do is really look at what are the things that aren't serving me, the self-limiting beliefs, the habits that don't fit anymore. If you don't work on those, then you are just trying to add more and more into your backpack till eventually it's going to get too heavy and then you just revert back to old habits.
Right. Well, I have one final question for you, and then I want you to tell us what your website is, and I will make sure everything's linked in the show notes, but I want them to hear it from you. So, my last question, if strength was stripped down to its purest form, like no weights, no programs, no gym, what does strength mean to you?
It's what you can lean on.
I like
You know,
that.
I'm getting emotional. Everybody's going to go through challenging times. And I think the biggest challenge, I love this quote, I think it's from Tony Robbins, who said, the biggest problem that most of us have is we believe we shouldn't have problems. And it's like just the reality of life is you're gonna run through shit. I don't care how good you are. You're gonna lose games. You're gonna strike out. You're gonna succeed. You're gonna have all the best intentions and still fall back. What is it that you can lean and fall back on? And that's why I'm such a proponent of stop trying to reach for the ceiling, just build up your floor.
Yeah.
And the stronger the foundation of strength that you have, the less you're going to fall down when times get really tough. So the more that you build up your shitty days, make your shitty days a little bit better rather than trying to just exceed and have the best of the best days, you know? And that's where I think the things that I found is the monotonous, boring, kind of ordinary days, those are the ones to really lean into gratitude, lean into faith, lean into strength, and make those days like really powerful. Like, you know, it's easy to find faith in the 1 out of 10 days when everything's going like shit, and the 10 out of 10 days, right? When everything's going great, that's easy to say, thank you, God, thank you, the universe, like everything's going great. Those middle of the pack days when nothing seems like it's really going on that much different, to be present and really focus of mastering your strength in those days, that's going to build you up more than anything else. So, yeah, it's what you lean on in the tough times and kind of the ordinary times.
Yeah, that's amazing. I don't even know how to end my show now because that was so great. I should have just hit end. No. Tell people where they can find you.
So you can check me out on my Instagram. It's Michael underscore Strength Connection. I have a podcast that I've done called The Strength Connection. We've been going for 4 years, got 300 plus episodes where I connect with other coaches and leaders in strength on physical, mental, spiritual strength. So you can go check that out. And then my website is called mystrengthconnection.com, where you can just check out my philosophies and a lot of stuff in there. And then there is a free gift for anybody that jumps on there, which is called the 1 Day Strength Challenge. So if you're interested in intuitive training and how to bring that into your program, I have a free ebook out there of how to start incorporating these intuitive practices right into what you're already doing right now.
That sounds fabulous. Make sure you guys get resourced. Michael, you are special, not because you built studios, not because you launched businesses, not because you pivoted when the world shut down. You're special because you stepped into the arena. You evolved instead of clinging to your ego. You asked harder questions when easier answers probably would have paid your bills. And I think that's incredibly rare. So, to everyone listening, listen to me. You have potential, not influencer potential, not comparison potential, but God-given assignment level potential. But that shit is not going to develop on the sidelines, on the couch. It develops in the arena where you risk, where you're willing to adapt, where you get your ass kicked and you come back stronger. So if you felt something in this conversation, please hit subscribe, share the show with someone you love, leave a written review. Yes, it matters because other people need to know this show exists. And if you believe that you're special enough to step into this hot seat and defend your work, please apply. Okay, I will see you guys in the arena. Michael, thank you again so much for your time today.
Thank you so much. This was a blast.